teach your kids financial literacy but not sure where to start? Greenlight can help. With Greenlight, parents can keep an eye on kids' spending and saving, while kids and teens use a card of their own to build money confidence. As a parent, you can send instant money transfers, set up chores, automate allowance, and more. It's a convenient way to run your household, customized to your family's needs, and the easy way to raise financially smart kids. Get started with Greenlight today and get your first month free at greenlight.com/pod.
It's the Eye on the Illini podcast. This time it's a two-part podcast with former Illini team photographer Mark Jones.
Kenny Battle was the best. And of course, that was within the first year or so that I was actually doing this. I'll never forget, it was in 89, we were playing Georgia Tech. The game was tied late in the game, and the place was just rocking. But Georgia Tech got a rebound, the game was tied, wasn't much time left. So Battle drifted back, because he knew the guy was going to throw the ball long, which he did. And Battle jumps up, grabs the ball, comes down, says, thank you, and goes back up and slams that thing out. And it made a great photograph.
Host Mike Kegley gets a candid conversation with so many Illini memories. We had to put this one into two parts. Now, let's get right to the show.
Welcome to Eye on the Illini. This is Illini guy Mike Kegley. And I'm telling you what, we have a real treat here today. What we've got is people around the Illini program will recognize this name. It's Mark Jones, and he is the official photographer of the University of Illinois sports programs. And he has held this title since roughly 1987. So when you talk about a lot of the big games, big moments, big players, big events, big coaches, Mark was there, and he was the person who was documenting it all for us to see. Mark, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you for having me. That's a grand introduction, by the way.
Well, we talk about you, we hear about you. I've never had the opportunity to meet you, but yet once I saw a couple articles and I'm like, well, I've seen that face before, because you know is over the years. Sure. You're at games, you see you somehow getting in position to take these pictures. How does one become the University of Illinois official sports photographer?
Well, at the time, the friend of mine introduced me to Camp Brown. Camp was a student up there at the time. And Kent asked me, he says, our photographer has retired that we've had. And Tab Bennett was the SID at the time. And he said, we're looking for, would you be interested in doing that? I said, well, I haven't shot sports since, my college days, but I think that'd be interesting. So I shot a game, and I shot Illinois versus Minnesota. This was in 1987, a home game. And I think this was Mike White's last year, I think, or next to last, I forget. And I got a great shot of a touchdown. I mean, just, really good. I'm thinking, well, maybe I can, I was using a Hasselblad at the time, and that way you get a 2.25 neg, and it's real sharp, a lot sharper than any 35 millimeter. So I showed that to contact sheets to Tab, and Tab said, Mark, this is a great shot of this Minnesota player scoring a touchdown. But he says, you're working for us, not Minnesota. I'm thinking, this is the difference between newspaper and, okay, we're working for somebody. Okay, all right. I get it. So, yep. And then after that, we hit it off. And then in 89, that's when Tab – retired. Yep. And Mike Pearson came in, and Mike was great to work with. He came out of Michigan State, and he was terrific. John McAvick hired him, and he still is. I just contacted him today, and he was a great organizer. He taught me a filing system that we use to this very day, a transition between negatives and to the digital world perfectly.
Oh, wow. And,
that we were all a little nervous about that at the time, but it worked flawlessly, and we still use it every day.
So now you went to school. I think you went to the same place I did, Southern Illinois Carbondale.
Absolutely. At the time, I was looking at Illinois, of course, because they're 30 miles away, but they did not offer any type of a photography degree at that point. And this was, this was 1969. It's been a few years. And, but Southern did. And, when I went down to my first visit to Southern, I could not believe all of the hills and hollers and, the national forest and the trees and nature. I mean, I thought Illinois looked like it does around here, all cornfields and so. I didn't get off the farm much when I was growing up. So, Carbondale was a nice, was a really good place and a great photography school. They just built a brand new building for radio, television, and still photography. It was state of the art, and it was a great time to be going there. And the instructors were top notch, and it was just, they never taught you how to make any money, but they did teach you how to take photographs.
Yeah, that and, was, that's a scary thing. I went down there for radio TV.
Okay.
This was in 1985. And all of a sudden I get down there and it's like, the average salary of a radio TV graduate is like $11,000. And I'm like, whoa. Yeah. Marketing, here I come.
Yeah, you made a wise move. Yeah, I have a friend of mine who was in radio and television down there, and as soon as he got out of school, he opened up a record store in DeKalb, Illinois, called Record Revolution, and we are still friends to this day. In fact, we just, Emerson, Lake and Palmer was one of a band that he introduced me to, and Carl Palmer just did a show in Chicago that we had second row seats, and it was great, just great to be back in that element, that rock and roll show element again. It was just grand, it was just like old times. Anyway.
Now, the other thing I wanted to ask you about, because this just, Ansel Adams is obviously, a legendary photographer.
Yeah,
and you had a chance to work like shoulder to shoulder with him.
Mm-hmm.
How the heck did you manage to pull that off?
Back in 1978, there was a gentleman who had a workshop. His name was Fred Picker. He had a workshop out in Vermont. And I had some cousins who lived not too far from Putney. So if I flew out there, I could borrow their car and drive to this photo workshop, and it was in the style of Ansel Adams. Fred had been out with Ansel, and it was and that's what I did. And we'd started the photography business down here in Arthur in 75, so this was just a few years away. We had one child at that time, so money was tight. Yep. But this was worth going to. So my wife, God bless her, she's always supported me. Beth says, well, then go. And so I went out there, and when Fred looked at my photos, he says, have you ever thought about going out to Adams's workshop out in Yosemite? I said, no, I really hadn't. He says, well, you need to apply for that. And so the next summer I did, and I got in. And Ansel was just really at the height of his fame. He was interviewing Playboy magazine. He just had a 20 by 24 print of Moonrise Hernandez that sold for over $74,000, which was a record for any photograph at that point. And when they asked him about it, they said, you set a record for sales on Moonrise Hernandez, And he says, well, that was a particularly fine print. But anyway, I got to know him. We were at Yosemite. It was unbelievable. That's when I photographed him. And then they had an opening for a photo workshop in the fall of that year. And he was one of the instructors, the main instructor. So I applied and got it. And then for the next, from 79 until 85 is when he passed. 84. And so for the next 5 years, I was going out there two or three times a year doing fine art photography, along with portraits and weddings and things like that.
Yep.
And one good thing about Ansel is being an artist. He was always really good about telling you that he never put you down because you were running a commercial studio, because that's what he did. And he always said, you know, you have to boil the pot. And he didn't mean marijuana. He meant you had to boil, you had to boil the pot to feed the family. And that's what he did. And that's what I did. And then on the side, you do your fine art photography. He always called it, I think Alfred Stieglitz came up with this. You have assignments from without. And those are the assignments where somebody comes in and they hire you, like today, to photograph some Mars candy bars with models. So you do that. And that's an assignment from without. You do it mainly because you kind of want to do it, but the money's good. That's the main reason. And then you have these assignments from within where you go out and you look and you see a waterfall, or you see, let's see, probably part of the desert down there in Dallas, or you see the river or trees or whatever gets you going. You see it and you have an emotional response to that subject matter. And then when you photograph it, that's an assignment that comes from within. And photographers and artists are always known, after they've gone to that, after the aftermarket takes over, which means they've gone to that great dark room in the sky.
Yes.
That's always the work that people want to have, is the work that they did when they were, and it was all only for themselves, not necessarily just for commercial work. Now, sports is a little different, because people like to have those images because it reminds them of that game that they watched. It was extremely thrilling. One great example is the game against Arizona that we were down, and then it took us, thanks to Darren Williams and the rest of the team, we win that game and go to the Final Four. And that game, the photos from that game, and then both Syracuse and Louisville in 89, when Illinois beat those two teams to end up go to the Final Four in 89, that was also a great, a lot of people wanted those images, and they got them.
Yeah, I was going to say that that game, as you're taking these pictures, are you able to like zone in with what's happening in the game at the same time? I mean, that's a lot to take to like be keeping track of, right?
Right, and I really don't. I have to concentrate on the action that's in front of me. And a good example of when I didn't do that, it was the Illinois-Indiana game that year at Indiana. I did not get a shot. Nick Anderson takes that last second shot.
Yep.
And we win that game. And it was so remarkable because that whole place was louder than hell when they scored and tied that game up.
Yep.
You couldn't hear the official blow a whistle. But when Nick sinks that shot, the whole place just went dead silent, except for a few of us, about 30 of us screaming. And it was one of the most unusual environments I have ever been in before or since. It was surreal. It was just so. Of course, the next question was, well, did you get a picture of Nick's shot? I said, well, I'm pretty sure I did. Well, hell, I'm watching. Yeah. I'm watching the play instead of taking a picture. Now, my excuse was, well, I know a ref was right in my way. I'd like to get him. Well, he got right in my way. When in reality, I watched him. So what you do now, what I did ever since then, when it's a last second shot like that, I just keep my camera on the player. Yep. The crowd's going to tell me whether or not it goes in.
Right.
I don't have to look at the basket. I'll know if it goes in or not. And then you get that reaction. It's a fraction of a second of the player who just made it. And Andy Kaufman made one against Iowa one time. And that's another good example of that. I got that. And I got the clock in. 0.03. was left when he took that shot.
So that would have been like a Tyler Griffey type of thing against Indiana, that type of thing.
Yes.
Well, I got a really, I didn't understand the skill sets that are so finely tuned for a photographer, until working with the Illini guys, one of my fellow Illini guys is like, well, if you're there at the game, take a few pictures.
Right.
I have no idea how you guys get anybody in frame when something happens, because I was constantly not prepared. And it's like, well, I have, did you get that shot? I'm like, well, I have Curbelo's elbow and part of the background. And then it's like, well, but Curbelo didn't shoot. And I go, yeah, that's what I got though. You know?
Yeah. It's I know exactly what you're talking about. I've done it many times. I always want that spot right next to the basket. Mm-hmm. And I don't mind shooting on defense either, because sometimes over the years, I always feel like, especially in college basketball, you get some of your best photos on the defensive end when they're playing good.
Yep.
And then shoot offense in the second half. You just can't let the emotion, you want Illinois to win so bad, because we've been Illinois fans forever, since I was a little kid. And mainly because my dad would take us up there to games, you know. It was a great thing to do with your dad. And it was great. And so you want them to win, but you've got to, it's not easy. Now, in the old days, before we had autofocus, it was even more of a challenge, because not only did you have to get them in the frame, you had to get them in focus.
Yeah.
And, boy, sometimes that was a struggle. I mean, you know, especially if we were hungover, it was a real struggle. And, you know, back in those days, a Decatur Herald photographer would come over, and he liked peppermint schnapps. So luckily that's what the Amish drink down here. So there's always plenty of that here in Arthur. So you had these little aluminum 35 millimeter film canisters. So you'd fill those up with, or plastic, either one, you'd fill those up with peppermint schnapps, and they don't leak. So when the action was going on at the other end of the court, we're down here chugging down those peppermint schnapps. And,
I'm going to tell my wife that was the issue with my ability to not
I'm sure
be a photographer. I didn't have enough peppermint schnapps.
Well, that's right. Or too much. I'm not sure. But we, Doug, of course, he's no longer around. He's going to that great dark room in the sky, but he always wore these black engineer boots. And this was back in the day when, you know, any sports writer or photographer always kept a bottle of booze in their drawer at the newspaper. They just all did, you know. That's just part of the deal. Some of those guys, I swear, were never sober in all the years I knew them, because they just drank all the time. It's just, and everybody smoked back in those days, you know, everyone's smoking. But one time Doug came over, and I don't know what he was doing. He probably drank a fifth of that peppermint schnapps before the game ever started. And he shot the whole game, and then he got fired. And so I asked a friend of mine, I said, why'd he get fired? He said, because he never put any film in the camera the whole game. And plus, the black marks from those engineer boots looked like something out of a cattle drive that was on the court. They had to sand the court off where he was sitting.
Ouch.
It was, it was.
It was a double whammy there.
Yeah, he was a character. He was, he always smelled like, cherry cough drops, probably from cherry schnapps.
You enjoy it. So
I digress.
We talked, you talked a little bit about that game against Arizona. Games stand out to you? Because literally there are some amazing moments that you've been witness to. Any of those, any other games just like pop out to you that you know your people ask you about, or you end up having to marvel at what you saw?
There's one game that was on the road, and this was against Minnesota. This was Frank Williams was playing. Bill was a coach.
Yep.
And at Minnesota, they have an elevated court, so no photographers sit on the end lines because they're afraid you're getting knocked off, or worse, you know, a ball player will try to avoid you and then end up falling right into the off the edge of that. It was about a 3-foot high elevation.
Yep.
So they wouldn't let anybody sit there. And I was bitching and moaning about that. And so they set us along the court side. And so I was across from the Illinois bench. And so the Illinois basket in the second half was right in front of me, or to the right of me as I was sitting. And I was bitching and moaning about that. How am I supposed to get a good shot here? Well, at the end of the game, Frank goes up, suspends himself in midair, takes a shot, hits it, we win. And what amazed me and other people about that shot was it's Frank's back. You don't see his face.
Right.
But the crowd of Minnesota fans that were watching him and the expressions on their faces were just unbelievable. Unbelievable spectacle of just how much a sporting event affects human beings. You know, it's just phenomenal because they had Illinois beat the whole game. I think we won this game. I think we won the Big Ten, I think, or something like that. There was a lot riding on that game. So after the game, and this was one of my first times with a digital camera. It had to have been because right after the game, I went and I showed it to Bill Self. I showed the picture on the back of the camera. And he goes, "That's awesome." I go, "Okay."
That's a good story.
And in today's world, you know, they want everything. They want the photos for social media mainly. You know, at the 16-minute mark in the first half. So you hand your cards off, which is no problem for me. And but all of a sudden, quality ended up kind of being a second fiddle. It was the speed of getting the images up, which was important. And, you know, it's like Bill told me one time when I showed him his photos and I told him, I said, "Bill, these photos of you aren't very good." He says, "Well, you can't make chicken salad out of chicken shit."
Yeah.
And that's kind of the way that things have gone in the realm of photography. Either that, I'm just getting older, you know, which is probably a factor too. But we're working on a project and we've done this once before, but we're trying to see if maybe we can't work it out a little bit broader. Because we're take what Adam's taught me about fine art photography, assignments from within, and apply that to a sports team during the season. And then, I mean, right now, the one that seems like would work the best in Illinois would be men's golf.
Okay.
Because they're perennial favorites, and it's an unbelievable story of Mike bringing championship golf to Central Illinois. You know, they're usually out at Pebble Beach, California, or they're in Texas, somewhere where it's warm during the winters, you know.
Yep.
And here, he's got them here, and he's got a heck of a team again. Brings them here to the Midwest. And it's because he's a great coach. And he's going to help those guys if they can do it. He's going to help them be pros.
Yeah.
And that make a great – and golf would lend itself well to fine art, I think, as well, you know, that approach.
Especially the backgrounds of some of those beautiful golf courses are just, I mean, I found myself, you know, like just thinking about like the University of Wisconsin, they've got University Ridge, you know, that beautiful golf course up there.
Yes.
And it's hard if you tee off at that course, especially me and some buddies, we'd tee off at like 6 a.m. there.
Mm-hmm.
And it was hard not to imagine yourself being like what it was like to be a PGA professional when you see these type of surroundings and well-manicured golf course. And up until the point where you make contact with the ball, the fantasy stays alive. Then you watch your shot and you're brought back to earth relatively quickly, but you're still out on that course and
right.
You know, the bent grass fairways and you can imagine what it's like for a real golfer. I think that would be a heck of a photo shoot, you know, under the hands of a master.
It would be. And, you know, it reminds me, you know, I took golf down at Southern, you know, my last, we were on quarters then. My last quarter, it was spring quarter, and it was warm down there. And things were a little different back then. I mean, you could play naked if you wanted to for that class. They really didn't care. As long as you were out there hitting that ball, it was an amazing experience. They don't allow that anymore, but there were no cameras in your phones back in those days, or, you know, nobody.
Yeah, there's a lot of things that will never, that would have been immortalized had there been camera phones. And let's all from people from 2002 and back, we'll thank the world for not inventing it yet.
You know, though, camera phones, you know, I use this iPhone at every sporting event at one time or another, usually for an establishing shot, because it's got a great panorama on it. And especially if the place is packed, and then you do a panorama and you send that out, and, you know, it helps to establish where that game is going to take place. And that's a huge, you know, it lets the people who are looking at those see where it's going on. It's something you really can't get from television or anything else, because they don't use wide enough lenses.
Right.
But with those little cameras, and it's amazing the quality that goes into those things. Low light, where digital really was a huge improvement, was in low light. And I mean, back over at Huff Gym, you know, to photograph, say, gymnastics, you can't use a flash. So, and it, you know, when we're just using film, you know, we'd have to use, you know, like some kind of the Tri-X pushed, 2,500, you know, it was a huge, grainy as can be. And then Fuji came out with an 800 film, which we could push, even, and it was color, but even though, you know, the grain was the size of basketballs, it was still better than what we had. Well, digital changed all that, because it's great at low light. It's just great. And you could freeze the action so quick, because you could use a fast shutter speed.
Right.
And you
talked a little bit about the how sometimes TV doesn't give you the full perspective. And that's another thing about working with Illini guys that has really been, and I got hit with that again, coming back and getting to see Myers Leonard, you know, return to the school. Because you really don't get, and I'm an avid NBA fan, but you don't get how big, you know in your brain how big Myers Leonard is.
Right.
But then you see him in front of you and you're like, oh my gosh, how is this person the same species as me? And then two other people come to mind, and I bumped into two other people that were bigger than Myers. Kofi Coburn is the size of a moving house.
Oh, he is.
And just like his calves are just so big, you know, let alone the rest of him. And then as big as he is, I'm standing 4 feet from Mr. Edie of Purdue, and he towers over Kofi by 4.5 inches. Do you ever think about stuff like that when you're trying to frame up a Kofi picture, or, you know, one of those ginormous individuals who plays sports?
Well, one of the first things that goes through my mind is, why the hell doesn't Illinois have any guys that big? But now that's changed.
Yep,
that has changed. And you know, we are getting those guys. Coach Underwood is doing a really great job in bringing those guys in. And really, we win that game last night if Kofi could have played.
Yeah.
But with the protocol they have these days, that was just not going to happen. And, you know, I had people complaining that, you know, well, why didn't, you know, like, it was like he socked him right underneath the jaw, you know, and why didn't he call a foul? I go, well, when you're ranked ahead of a team, you're going to get a call now and then that, or a no call that probably should have been called. That's just the way it works.
Yeah.
And so with Kofi, you wait, he'll get the ball. And then you wait, you see what he's going to do with it. And now, and I'm doing this through the camera most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the time I have an eye off the camera, but I've got to focus on him because, you know, the autofocus on these newer cameras is superb.
Yep.
And it's going to be in focus. I swear that thing has a brain. It picks up how I focus, and it knows. It's anyway, it's kind of creepy, really. It's like an extension of your brain, but nevertheless, it works great. And Kofi is such a dynamic player. And I've got shots with him. I got several in the Missouri game where he's back a ways, and it looks like he's going to go up and take a jump shot, but he doesn't. He dunks it.
Yeah.
From that far away, which I don't think I've ever photographed a player that's done that before. I don't think so. As I think and look back over those images, it was phenomenal.
You're a fan like everybody else. So over the years, do you have any favorite players that you enjoy shooting, you know, from a camera standpoint, more than other players, or you found like, boy, these people are really photogenic and they just seem to make a good shot for you, so to speak?
Kenny Battle was
the
best. And of course, that was within the first year or so that I was actually doing this.
Yep.
And he was, I'll never forget, it was in 89. We were playing Georgia Tech. We'd scheduled Georgia Tech right in the middle of the season. And it was up here at they called it the Assembly Hall then.
Yep.
And it was up here. And you know, we were ranked high, and so were they. And the game was tied late in the game, you know, and the place was just rocking. And they got a rebound. I forget who shot the ball, but Georgia Tech got a rebound. The game was tied. Georgia Tech got a rebound. There wasn't much time left. So Battle drifted back because he knew the guy was going to throw the ball long, which he did. And Battle jumps up, grabs the ball, comes down, says, thank you, and goes back up and slams that thing home. And it made a great photograph.
Yep.
You know, and those guys, he and Nick Anderson, photographically, as a basketball player, Kendall Gill, Nick Anderson, and Kenny Battle were by far, and Stephen Bardo. Stephen didn't shoot much. You know, he was a passing guard forward. I've got some photos of him driving to the basket. And the time he did a reverse dunk, and of course I got that. And he asked me, we were at Indiana, and he asked me, he says, you remember that reverse dunk I did? I said, oh yeah, the one you got benched for? He goes, yeah. And he made it, but he still got benched. He said, you don't have to have a copy of that, do you? I said, yeah, I can get you one. He said, okay. So I met him over in Indiana. He was going in to do a broadcast. This was several years later. And so I had a 16 by 20 of that print, and I gave it to him. He goes, my 4-year-old son does not believe that his dad ever dunked like this. And now I can show him. And,
that's awesome.
You know, those guys, were just a special group of guys that you just never forget, you know. It was, and they were close, you know, everybody was close back at that time, and it was great fun. It was great fun to know them, and we still stay in contact with all of them to this day. And then of course that was the first Final Four we'd been to in years.
Yep.
But Lou finally got us there. But 2005 was also another terrific year. And those are the years you remember because they were so talented. And of course the Arizona game in the 2005 run made, that was an unbelievable game, because usually when we were down by that many points, you quit taking photographs because no one's going to use them. You know,
right.
They're not going to be used for anything. So you quit, but I did not stop photographing in that game. I don't know why, but I didn't. And that's how I got photos for the cover of Bruce Weber's book.
Yep.
I keep shooting. And it was an amazing, that place was an amazing place to be that day and at that time, which is something I really love about sports, you know, is the immediacy, the presence, the time that right now is when you're seeing that and you're living in the present and you're living through really exciting times, especially when they win games like that. And you never forget it. You know, you just never forget it. And people love it so much. It's phenomenal. And, you know, so do I.
That Arizona game is going to live forever too, because you can turn on the Big Ten Network or you can turn on ESPN Classics and they will, that one's going to run, you know, until they stop playing basketball.
Yeah.
You're just not going to run into too many. Mm-hmm. Did you realize it on that day? I mean, when you were there shooting that, you know, again, you got a lot of stuff going on. Did you realize the historic nature? I mean, could you feel the electricity or was it just?
Oh, yes, absolutely. The place was on fire. I mean, it was, you know, it's a small venue. It's where they had that game, which was unusual at the Rosemont. But, you know, there's a lot of unusual things happen in Chicago.
Yes.
And so here we are in this small venue. So the people were just piled on top of each other. You know, you got Bill Murray in the crowd. You know, and and I've got a Bill Murray story for you. I'll tell you in a minute. But anyway, he was there and the place was just, it's just indescribable. You can't put it into words, but you can feel it. You know, it's like musicians, you know, feel a vibe, you know, when things are going well, you can't put it into words, but you feel it, you know, when it's happening and you live, that's what you live for, of course. And it was just, you know, those are the games that you live for. And early on, you know, those are games that I kind of dreaded because, you know, you go, geez, what if I miss shots? What if I blah, 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 blah. And I was always thinking about all the negative stuff that happened. I'm thinking, wait a minute. That never happens with you. Just shoot the damn game and don't worry about it, which is what I do. But you're right. We do detach to keep working. You just can't be, distracted by what's going on in the crowd and all, but you can't help but feel it. And you do feel it big time. And it will always influence how hard you work. And it brings your attention level up to a heightened degree. So whatever's going to happen, the odds are pretty good I'm going to get it, because you think through all the possibilities. You can't think through them all, but you think through the ones that might happen. Like he may go left, he may go right, he may pass in, you know. So, and that's what we were thinking about Darren at the time.
Yep.
And then, or he may shoot the ball, which is what he did, and he nails it, and all of a sudden it's tied. And I think we were down by 19, I think. And they come back and win that game. It was the most unbelievable, unbelievable game I think I've ever attended. It was just nirvana. I mean, you know, and for all the marbles, you know, it was to go to the Final Four.
Yeah, I mean, it was an amazing game. As we kind of get close to wrapping up here, what coaches stand out, you know, through the years? Were you able in your role to get to know the coaches and you know, I'm assuming you, like anybody else, you know, some people you got to know a little better, some people maybe not as much.
You know, it's funny, back when Lou, you know, I came in when Lou was coach, of course, and then we got to know him and the whole family. And hell, he mentioned me in his book.
Yep.
Yep. I think he mentioned about everybody, but nevertheless, it's always nice to be mentioned like that. Anyway, photographers, man, we're all egomaniacs, I'm telling you. I mean, the worst egomaniacs you will ever meet. Crazy. And I'm not apologizing for that.
Yeah.
Anyway, no, Lou was a gentleman. And you know, it was funny. Lou never swore. He never swore. Now, I was in the locker room sometimes. And one time he was yelling at a player, and this was a game before the conference ever started. This was an exhibition game, and he's yelling at a player, and I'm standing behind this player, and I'm telling you, I felt like I was the one catching the hell for not shooting or passing the ball accurately. because he was so intense and he never swore. Now, Dick Nagy, I learned more swear words and better ways to phrase them than anybody I'd ever heard in grade school, high school, or college.
Wow.
He was a master at it. He was he could make them into verbs, adverbs, nouns, pronouns.
He was a black belt in profanity.
Oh, absolutely correct. He could do a pirouette when he was when he was mad at one of the refs. Funny thing, nobody ever wanted a photo with a ref in the picture. None of those coaches ever. Anyway, he'd do a pirouette, and this was like my first games up there. I'm thinking, wow, I had no idea this stuff went on. This is great. I mean, this is great. You got the Illini ants in front of you. Anyway, I digress. What were we talking about?
The coaches. Yeah.
Okay, all the coaches, even after Lou, John Makovic, he was they made him AD as well. And John was a heck of a football coach. I mean, we go to 4 bowl games in 4 years. Heck of a coach. And he went to, we were under some investigation by NC2A, and John backed Lou up. So, that way Lou stayed on, which he should have.
Yep.
And I give John a lot of credit for that. Usually they don't do that. They just say, okay, you're gone. But he didn't, and I'm glad he didn't. Anyway, but when Lou did retire, then Ron Gunther was the AD, and he hires I'll think back to him. But geez, we just met up with him at an NC2A tournament game. He went to the pro. He went to Atlanta.
Lon Kruger.
Yep. And Lon was a gentleman, a really good coach, soft-spoken, but really, really good. We got to know them well. And then Bill Self, we probably knew Bill and his family better than anybody.
Okay.
And Bill was, and is, one of the best coaches, one of the best fellas I've ever been around. And he, and I'm glad that he's done well in Kansas. Bill is just a really good fellow, to say the least. I'm glad I know him. And anyway, he was good. I really hate to see him leave. But when Kansas came calling, that was a lot of money, and that's who they wanted. And money is no object, basically. So I don't blame him. I'd do the same thing. And then Bruce Weber was great. He came up from Southern. He'd had success at Southern, comes up here, and he was great. We got to know him and his whole family well.
But it was Coach Gross came. John Gross came.
That's right. John Gross. Jeez. God, there's been so many.
Yeah.
John Gross. Yeah. And John was okay too, but John just could not win that big game, which you really desperately needed.
Yep.
But Coach Underwood is a fiery guy, and he can get those guys' attention. And there's no question, Illinois will do fine under him. He's a good coach and great rapport with the players and the other coaches. And of course, he asked if he could take a photo with me down there in St. Louis, and he was on the sainthood pedestal at that point, as far as I'm concerned. And plus, we won that Missouri game handily, which was great. We were just on fire that game, and it was terrific. That's always one of your favorite, games of the preseason, is that game in St. Louis, because you talk about a vibe. It's always a vibe in that place. And you got Illinois, Missouri, and it doesn't matter who's the best team that year. You can throw all that out the window.
Yeah.
You never know for sure who's going to win that game.
It was really nice to see Missouri get knocked down finally.
Yes, absolutely right.
They had had the better of it the last few years, and I don't like that.
I don't either. I'll tell you what, the one year when it was – there was no time left on the clock, and our player had to shoot two free throws. He had two free throws with no time left, and the game is tied. And Norm, their coach, is out on the floor complaining to the officials at midcourt the whole time he's taking these, trying to take these foul shots. The place was just crazy. And, you know, he misses them. And so we go to overtime and we get beat. And then afterwards, I'm talking to Mary Henson, Lou's wife. And Mary goes, "Oh, I just hate it when we lose this game." I said, "Yeah, it's pretty tough." She goes, "Lou is just a bear through the Christmas season. If we can't win this game." So, well, I never thought of that. But of course she was right.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's the price of being a basketball coach, right?
It's like Gene Katie said when he went to doing some broadcast after he retired, and they asked him, he said, "Well, what's the big difference between sitting here doing this and coaching and or sitting up here doing the broadcast and the coaching?" He says, "I can sleep at night."
Yeah. Exactly. You know, Vitale and Madden talked about that quite a bit too.
Vitale was another interesting cat who I met and got to know pretty well, photographed him on several different occasions.
Yep.
And he he's really a good fella. He's really a good fella and extremely knowledgeable. I mean, yep. If Lauren Tate would have been on TV, this would have been Lauren out there instead of Dick. Yeah. Easily.
Lauren, I mean, you're talking, you know, he's, I like to tease him because he's covered Illinois since the year I was born. And trust me, you know, even before one of the shows on the Saturday Sports Show, he goes, "You're not going to bring up, you know, the listening to me on the radio." Nah. Steve Kelly asked a question, which it comes up, you know. There's some people who just have that that knack. And I remember my dad when I was like 13 years old. Mm-hmm. And of course Lauren had written something that you know I disagreed with, you know, Illinois wasn't gonna win. Well, it turned out he's right in the long term.
Yes, Illinois. Yeah. That's what made people mad the most.
Oh, I know. And so my dad's like, "You realize that he's writing that so that not only will you get mad today, but so that when his next article comes out, you'll go right to that." And I'm like, "No." And then like 3 days later, I'm reading, you know, his next column. And my dad's like, "See?"
Your father was a very wise man.
So Lauren won that battle very many times. And I will tell you, I go back to some of my first memories of Illinois are tied up with the media. And I still remember Lauren's article when Russell Cross shocked the world and went to Purdue instead of Illinois. And I remember that column. And as a little kid, it was like, you know, I mean, it wasn't little, but, you know, 12 years old, whatever it was. That was like a world ender, you know, because you were like, "Oh, Illinois is going to get Russell Cross and they're going to build around it." Right. And if you take a look at the guys who came the next 2-3 years, if Russell Cross would have been on the team, you probably win a national title.
Probably. I remember that.
I'm the same age as Benji Wilson.
Okay.
So we all remember, you know, when you're my age and you live in the state of Illinois, we got a chance to watch Ben Wilson down at the Prairie Capitol, down in the Prairie State games, which nobody even knows what they are anymore.
No.
And we watched him before they won a state title. And we were like, "Oh my gosh, this kid," I'll be honest, to this day, I think he's the second best player I've seen prior to going pro live, and only Magic Johnson was better.
I agree.
But Ben Wilson was in high school when I saw him, not in college. And the thing is, you know, we were like, you know, Ben Wilson would have been an Illini. And then, you know, you take those two guys onto the Illini and they might have won 2-3 titles in the 80s. You know,
even if Wilson hadn't gotten killed, if he could have come to Illinois.
Oh, yeah.
Nick Anderson.
Yep.
Wow.
Yep. It's amazing. Well, I tell you what.
That was so tragic. I'll never forget.
Yeah, that was
terrible. Anyway,
it was painful. But I tell you, we're going to have to schedule you for a second run through because we barely scratched the surface here.
Yes.
But thank you so much for coming on, Mark. It was a trip down memory lane. And you know, I don't think a lot of us realize, especially us who are the newspaper generation, how many times our visions of what we saw, you know, we got to see through your eyes,
right?
You know, as those pictures are out there, and that's what we were seeing, the Illini, unbeknownst to us, from you. So I want to thank you for all those shots over the years, because that was a big part of growing up, you know, as you watch, and then over the years, you get grown up and you're in the working world, and the Illini is a, you know, their games are a respite from, you know, having to go to work every day, and you've got kids to raise and all those things going on.
Absolutely.
And you get a couple hours to watch an Illini game, and then you kind of frame the memory for us. That was pretty cool.
Well, I appreciate that. And you know, like in the article I sent to you, you know, old buildings, politicians, whores and photographers all get respectable if they live long enough. And that's actually a quote from the movie Chinatown. Robert Towne wrote that. But anyway, it's true. Yep. Nevertheless, wherever it came from.
Okay, well, I appreciate
thank you
it,
so
sir.
Much.
Thank you.
Appreciate
I really it. Enjoyed it. Take care.
Thank you so much.
That's the Eye on the Illini podcast, powered by IlliniGuys.com. Be sure to subscribe to the Eye on the Illini podcast wherever you download podcasts. This has been a presentation of LMBC Sports and JM Talent Productions.